This podcast is brought to you by NetBank. Whether you're thinking of franchising your business, buying into or revamping your franchise, stay tuned for tips on how to grow your brand and portfolio.
Welcome to another episode of NetBank Franchise Podcast. I'm your host, Charles Schwinn. Today we have Leon DeLonga. Leon is from Pick and Pay Market Store. He is the National Head of Department Manager. Welcome to the show, Leon.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm so excited to be with you guys today.
Leon, and as everybody will know by now, this is pre-recorded. I am sitting in Pretoria and Leon is sitting in Cape Town. But before we started the show, we were just talking about Leon gave us a brief history that as the COVID-19 happened, it reminded him of back in 94 again, when he was a young 26-year-old store manager in Pretoria. Take us through that day, Leon.
Yeah, thanks, Joss. I mean, obviously, the election started, the first democratic elections in the country was in 94. And being in the center of town in Pretoria was quite an experience. Obviously, leading on to the elections, there was the protest actions that used to take place. And my store was on the route that was leading to the Union Building. So quite a few of the protests actually went past the store. So on a Wednesday and on a Saturday, my store was mostly closed for the marches that took place. So the marches would march from Church Square or from the taxi rank to the Union Buildings and back in the morning and the afternoons. And therefore, we got used to having no customers and lots of police and people around just prior to the elections. And then obviously, leading on to the elections, there was lots of panic buying going on from customers, not sure what the outcome of the elections would be. We had products never ever sold in our business suddenly start selling. People who were buying fresh vegetables were suddenly starting to buy canned vegetables and dried beans and smash and long life milk, and they were stocking up heavily. So we experienced a small snippet of what the country experienced now prior to COVID-19. I think prior to the elections, I think the mostly white population was very nervous, and therefore they were the predominantly doing all the bulk buying. I think at the moment everybody's was exposed and obviously we're doing bulk buying for prior to lockdown in the COVID-19 thing. So we had a double whammy this time around in terms of the volumes, but very similar in terms of products, shopper behavior, etc. that we had in 94.
So the lesson of it is, doesn't matter if it's a virus or a election, people buy the same thing.
Yeah, people don't always buy stuff that they can that lasts longer. So this time around, we had a huge run on, I mean, in the country, we had a run on toilet paper, which is a legacy issue from Europe, and they're buying. I mean, it was a new thing for me that we were suddenly buying so much toilet paper. Otherwise, the products that people bought was mostly around edible groceries and dry edible groceries. Lots of starch, lots of pastas, lots of long life milk, canned veg, canned fruits, all those type of categories of products that you can basically hoard for a long time and should last you. Over and above that, people bought meat and were hoarding meat, and they bought chest freezers and started freezing meat, etc., etc. It was quite a situation for us.
The Pick and Pay Market Store program is a very unique concept. Pick and Pay has been partnering with independent traders to upgrade their local spaza shop into their own market stores in townships while remaining 100% independent. Please tell us about these new store formats.
Yeah, this is a format that is basically designed to deal with the neighbor, the convenience format in the emerging market, as we call it. Townships is always a name that gets bandied around, and spaza shops, a name people always refer to. But the reality is, like, some of these stores were called superstores and supermarkets in the days. Some guys were called spaza shops. So depending on their size, location, and the context where they existed, they were either called a spaza or a supermarket. These are predominantly there and serving the emerging market of South Africa.
I see. I believe the Market Store program was launched in Gauteng in 2016. Talk to us about some of the research that was done, perhaps even the strat session, or was there any survey, or was it years and years of data collection prior to the launching?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we would love to call it we sat down and strategically planned this thing for 10 years. I don't think it happened like that. So, I mean, a lot of stuff in retail sometimes happened because of necessity and the needs from consumers. So we were contacted by the Gauteng government around 2015. And they were trying to find solutions to assist local owned supermarkets and shops and spaza shops in the townships and emerging market to be able to be competitive and to give them access to bulk buying in order to be competitive in the environments that they were operating in. So the idea was basically, the initial idea was that we were going to find a wholesale deal and supply them with good pricing. That was the initial plan. And to that end, obviously, we had a meeting with them, and then we went on a fact-finding mission to Soweto, and we met up with a bunch of spaza shop owners, informal traders, in the townships with local governments, Gauteng, Economic Propeller, etc. And we went around to the stores, we met them, we went around to the opposition, and the opposition included big supermarkets, formalized retail, pick and pay stores, ShopRite stores, and also spa stores. And then obviously the informal trade, which included local and foreign traders. And at the end of it, we basically realized that supply of cheap groceries is not going to be a sustainable business model. And we had to come up with a different solution.
If I'm understanding correctly, what makes this program really, really unique is that all the stores are still 100% owned by the owners, as in the spaza owners.
Yeah. So all these stores, I mean, to participate in the program, the first criteria is you've got to be a local person in South Africa holding a South African passport. That's the first criteria you have to be. Obviously, you need to come from the environment that you want to go trading. You either are trading there already, used to trade there, or want to go back to your roots and go and trade where you grew up. So essentially, we try and make sure that we get as close to local as possible, and that people can associate with the environment and the customers in the areas can associate with the owners of the stores. And then to strengthen that relationship with the community, we name the stores completely different to where we traditionally name pick and pay stores. So if you think of a traditional way pick and pay names their stores, it'll be a pick and pay supermarket, and then it might have a name saying Constantia, pick and pay Constantia, or pick and pay supermarket Claremont, or in Joburg, pick and pay Hyde Park. In this store, we decided to use a name that were synonymous either with the area, or the shopping center, or the little shop, or the owner's name as the prefix to the brand market stores. And so we have stores called Mandisa's Market. We've got stores called Monogeng's Market. We've got stores called Nzinga's, etc., etc. So we've got all these local names and associations prefixed to the name market stores. And that way, we make customers aware that although there's a pick and pay brand on here, it's a market store, and it's owned by a local person in that particular environment.
That must bring such pride into the local community. I mean, are there any stories that stand out from the spaza owners that you can share with us?
I mean, there are so many great stories. So what we try and do prior to opening a store is we try and find out about the history of a particular store. And then we try and put up even mural walls in the stores to try and depict the history of the store. We had a store called Maketa's Market, which is in central Soweto. When we met Reggie Maketa, who's the owner, his family essentially built this little, let's call it a little center, but it's really basically a standalone building with a bit of space at the bottom for supermarkets. On top, there was a bar called Roots Bar. Now, if you go and you listen to the history of that particular environment or that store and the bar, that bar was raided in the 60s and 70s when Miriam Makeba was a young lady playing music and having parties there illegally, drinking and going on top of this shop at the bottom, which was owned by the Maketa family. So when Reggie approached us to convert his store, He had just returned from America, having finished his marketing degree. His mother was running a small little shop on the side selling beds and furniture. And they'd actually sublet the supermarket to a foreign trader. And he wanted to take back that and re-establish the Makita brand and also the local ownership of the store. So Reggie then basically converted his store, where his mother, the whole community was there. They could all associate with the family, the history. And it's quite these openings are quite emotional days, because the people that operate those stores in the community all come there in hordes. I mean, we have sometimes 500-600 people just coming to the speeches in the morning before the opening. There are so many of these stories out there that I mean, I could spend hours talking about these type of scenarios that exist almost in every single one of the stores that we operate.
That is pretty incredible. Did you say like 500-600 people queuing up to listen to the speech?
Yes, I mean, it's amazing.
Wow.
And we get everybody there. I mean, it's the local communities there. We make sure the schools come in and support. We've got government in support. We've got local councillors in support. We've got community leaders come out in support. Churches comes out to support. It's actually an amazing thing. And we do, we with the owners help, do a great job of making sure that we involve as many of people in the community as we can, because you only get one chance to launch a store and have a communication with people and explain the concept, explain the future of that particular store. Show them that who the owner is, show them who the people are we employ there. Because another thing we do is we get the councillor to come up, the local councillor to come up and say, I know Reggie and his family for so many years, and all the staff here, I know them, you all know them. They stay here, they're all from your families. We've now created 20 or 30 jobs in this particular environment, in our area. And I know that none of these people are not from our area. And that reinforces the local pride and ownership that the owner has and also the community has with that particular store.
That must make your job and your work so rewarding to see this every time you do a store opening.
Absolutely. It's an amazing feeling to take an individual, most of the time, really run down supermarkets and really launch high quality supermarkets, well qualified and great operators who give back to the communities the way that these guys do. So it is amazing. It's really it's like we always say it's a job. It's not. It's a privilege to be in my job, because it's an empowerment job. When you just open stores and there's a corporate store, it's not the same feeling, because although you're creating jobs, it's still big business and not small business benefiting. But in this environment, getting local owners is so rewarding.
Mm. I'm sure if somebody's listening, they'll be like, I own a spaza shop, I also want to get involved. I believe up to March this year, the program has opened more than 30 stores. Are you planning to grow more?
Yeah, I mean, we got hundreds of people on applications almost every month that want to be part of the program. Obviously, we have a restraint, because the restraint really is always around resources in terms of capital available to do the development of the stores. And also, we have to be mindful not to rush too fast with the development of stores. Otherwise, we'll lose the guys that we've opened, and our biggest job is to make sure they stay successful. So we have a program of opening about 20 to 30 stores every year. And at some point, when we get to a certain critical mass, we then will be able to grow exponentially. But for now, we're happy to grow at 20 to 30 stores a year, and then see how it goes from there.
Mm. And I believe one of the major, major benefits, I'm sure that brings a lot of value, is you include mentorship in the program.
Yeah, I mean, everybody in there's a lot of stakeholders in this program. So, I mean, Pick n Pay obviously are the main stakeholders as far as operating the stores is concerned, but there are funders like Nedbank. We did a lot of work with Old Mutual and Masazani as well in the beginning of the program. We have other funders involved, CIFA, NEF, and so forth. And all of them have a vested interest. So everybody's got some role to play in post-investment mentorship and support. Our job is to make sure that the guys are properly trained up front. And no amount of training will ever prepare a person to actually run a business. So the support post the actual opening is crucial. And the team we've got put together at the moment spends at least 2 months intensively caretaking every single store to ensure that the training gets filtered through. And then we've got a team with ongoing supports the stores and making sure they do a good job and that they deliver to their customers the service they're supposed to, and they have businesses actually viable and stay viable. The stakeholders, like the banks, Nedbank, with partnerships with training agencies, will interject other trainings like financial management, more strategic stuff, more entrepreneurial skills trainings, and so forth. So we try and blend all these different stakeholders' input with ours and support the guys as much as we can.
Okay, so speaking about that, I mean, it must be quite a transformation mentally for the spaza shop owners. I mean, can you talk to us some of the areas that they need a lot of mentorship over? For example, switching from manual to all of a sudden everything's barcoded and there's point of sale systems, anything like that they struggle with?
Well, yes. I mean, obviously, the change in systems is a dramatic one. And again, you get varied levels of skill that you deal with. So when you get younger people who are used to working in computers, not scared to engage and to learn, it's a bit easier. It's still difficult. I mean, the system we use is basically a SAP-based system that manages the inventory in the business. Now, if anybody has ever worked on anything the Germans create, will know it's not the easiest system to work on. The Germans don't design stuff for ease of use, they design it for accuracy. And therefore, it's quite an intense system to get to learn. I think that's just exercise and practice. So it's not like it will basically stop them from being successful. It just takes them longer to be fully effective, but it does take a bit of time just to get through the system. And learning classroom training style systems is not always the best way to do it, but you've got to start with the base. And then applying it there is quite important. The other challenges, obviously, is just the way you operate your business. Cash flow management is a major problem in most small businesses, and in supermarkets is even more important.
When you say cash flow management, are you referring to balancing the books, or just make sure you don't overstock and don't have any cash on hand? Or what do you mean by cash flow in this instance?
Yeah, so cash flow is not the financial accounting thereof. It's basically the olden days, with the way that the old Greeks and small shops used to run their cash flows was a very simple thing. Every morning they look at their bank balance, and if there was cash in the bank, they could buy stock and they would make money. So that was the simplest way to ascertain, and it's most probably still the acid test. So if your bank balance keeps growing and your shop is full of stock, then your cash flow management is obviously good. Today's times, unfortunately, you can't work that way anymore, and the range of products you've got to sell makes it more complex to manage. So cash flow management goes about managing, first of all, your turnover in the business, making sure your sales is as expected, adjusting your purchases accordingly, and also making sure you right-size your business as far as your expenses is concerned. And then from a gearing point of view, how do you gear your business to make sure that you can still, from your cash flow generated from operations, you still make enough profit to pay your loans and hopefully leave some reserve capital in your business. So those are concepts that's quite difficult for guys who've never needed to do that because their business was cash before. So typically a spaza shop would start with 5 to 10,000 rand. You would go to a wholesaler, get in a bucket, go to a wholesaler, buy 10,000 rand with the stock, go back to your store, sell all 10,000 rand with the stock, take whatever capital you've got, go back to the wholesaler and go and buy, repeat the same exercise again. Not very scientific and also not very sustainable. So what we do is obviously teach guys to look forward. I mean, we give them an account, say 28 days to pay, but we make sure their inventory in their business, their stock, is less than 18 days so that they have cash flow in their business. It means they turn their stock into cash before they have to pay us. And then obviously we have to help them manage and understand the expenses and right-size their business to generate enough cash and profit to be able to pay their loans.
Leon, I've got one final question. What keeps you going every single day? Because I can imagine like no 2 days are ever the same, and you are only human. I'm sure you've gone through highs and lows, but what keeps you going every day?
Well, I've always adopted a philosophy that you can only change what's ahead of you, not what's behind you. That's the number one thing to remember. I think that if you wake up every day and you try and make a small difference to your day, somebody else's day, the company's day, the community's day, the government, the country, in any way you can play a role on earth. I mean, you should try, if you can make a difference every day in a small way, that's motivation enough and should be motivation enough for everybody. I think that I've always been driven. I grew up on a farm, and in a farm you have to get up in the morning, otherwise you get kicked out to be out and about. But you had to wake up with a purpose every day, and sometimes the purpose changes in the day, and you need to then basically be able to adapt and do the things that comes ahead of you. Sometimes planning is great, sometimes being a little bit messy is also good. So yeah, for me, basically, it gets me up every morning is to make a change in a small way in what I do, whether it's my family life, whether it's in my work environment, and whether it's my community. I think that's something that that keeps me going.
Listeners, that is Leon DeLange, and he is the National Head of Department for Pick and Pay Market Store Program. Leon, thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much, Charles. Thanks for having me, and thank you for the show.
Absolutely. Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by NetBank. Stay tuned for more on franchising, or search NetBank Franchising for valuable information. See money differently. NetBank.